This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrock and Tommy Gester.
Hey there, everybody. Happy Monday to you. It is Jacob Albrock and Brandon Zinner in for Tommy this morning. Max Power producing. We are glad to be with you to get a week started because it's been a very busy weekend and we have a lot to say about it. So we're happy to be here with you on KFH 97.5 FM on 12 News Plus, Facebook, YouTube, X. You can get in touch with us lots of different ways. You can call us at 869-1240. You can leave us messages on our video streams. Those are easy to do if you're watching us on Facebook, YouTube, or X. Or if you're listening to us on the Odyssey app, you can hit that little microphone and you can leave us a voice message. All kinds of different ways to get in touch with us. It's the draft in the books. We've got the Royals back in action. Wichita State adds a new player. There's the NBA playoffs that Brandon's far more locked into at this point than I am, but we can get into any of that if we need to. Brandon, how are you this morning?
Yeah, the Minnesota Timberwolves yesterday had the Lakers so rattled that the Lakers did not even make a substitution in the second half. The Wolves up 3-1. Yeah, I am locked into the NBA playoffs. An awesome NFL draft to follow as well. It was it's a slow time for the sports calendar, but it sure did not feel like it over the weekend.
Yeah, not this week isn't, because the draft sort of consumes us a little bit, and it did. And there were a lot of juicy things that we'll get into. You had the Chiefs getting through the rest of their draft. We talked to you Friday. Josh Simmons, I want to get Brandon's take on the Simmons pick, and then we'll look at the rest of their draft, some of the other teams there. And of course, the Shedeur Sanders story. It blows my mind. I think he's got a chance to be a pretty good quarterback in the league. To fall that far is pretty interesting. Didn't expect it. I don't think a lot of people did. Maybe outside of the NFL, inside it, it became pretty clear. I think all the things, but we'll get into all of these things. The Royals are sort of back, right? Like, we wondered if it was just as simple as the schedule could cure what ails them. Well, it sure seems like the schedule is curing what ails them after just a brutal stretch of games to start the year. As far as who they're playing, the Royals have now finished a homestand and they won all of them but one game, and they're right back in the mix here, just a game under 500. And feeling pretty good about them, too. So we'll get into all of this today. Brennan, the draft, how much do you lock into the later rounds of the draft? Are you just kind of, it's on, just kind of keep an eye on? I know you were working, so you got to pay probably a bit more attention than most because we have to try to follow all the local storylines. Tons of KU and K-State players go. We had a kid from campus get drafted. How is the end of the draft for you?
No, I'm kind of a draft sicko, not in the fact that where I'm grinding these guys' film all off season and then reading every single profile, but I do listen to a lot of draft podcasts just because it's fascinating to me how, like, especially the mock draft cycle. You can have five different mock drafts and they'll have someone different going into every single pick. So I like diving into all these players. For example, Breshard Smith, the Chiefs running back that they get in the seventh round out of SMU. I'd been pounding the table for him for quite a while. I really liked what he was able to do. It seemed like he was going to be there in the later stages, and I just think that that's going to be a really good fit. I think he's going to have a chance to really push for a lot of snaps this season. I love locking into all seven rounds. Because, you just never know who's going to make an impact, especially even in UDFAs. We see it all the time. Brett Veach, almost as good as anybody. There's people taking on day three and after that are going to make impacts on this Chiefs roster.
Yeah, you and I cut our teeth with Division II schools. UDFA is just sort of the wheelhouse for programs with really good players who maybe don't have the hype. So, yeah, I'm with you. I'm kind of more into the strategy of it a little bit. I like trying to get inside the draft room. Like, what are we thinking here? I can't take it down the list. And I was actually, it's funny. Breshard Smith is a guy I like a lot too. But then we look at it for the Chiefs, for example, and then it's Jalen Royals out of Utah State. I don't know much about Jalen Royals out of Utah State. Where did they take him? How much did they emphasize the position? That kind of thing is where I get a little into it when you get further down the board. And it's even moved up for me. But we'll get into the Chiefs in the next segment. At a bird's eye, though, I thought their strategy in this draft was solid. I thought it was really solid.
For the most part.
I thought they did a nice job of sort of combining both of the things that we talked about they need to do, and they moved around to get it done. They had a lot of picks. So it's interesting because you'll probably have a little more to say about the specific players. But for me, it's just like, what did they do and what were they trying to accomplish? And then you need to look around the rest of the league. There were probably a lot of teams that got a little better. You know, I wonder if any teams that was really close to the Chiefs, you know, of course, they lose the Super Bowl to the Eagles. But when we talk about the Ravens or the Bills, did they do anything to close the gap? Oh, you can make a case for the Ravens that they potentially got a whole lot better on defense. Right. So we'll look at all of that throughout the day today. It is a great day. And then a real quick bird's eye on the Royals. It's exactly what we kind of had to see early in a season. You want to talk about a week for as a Royals fan? You get the 3-game sweep of Colorado, the 2 out of 3 against Houston. You pitched well, you hit well in several of those games, about half of them, and you get Cags in a move to the Alpha. It's a good week to be a Royals fan last week.
Oh, of course. Yeah, it's funny. I was on Sports Sunday on 12 News with TJ last night, and he's sitting here talking about how not enough people are talking about the brutal stretch that the Royals had. I said, no, TJ, we talked about it every single day. You were just enjoying a honeymoon in Hawaii, as you right. should have been. I say that obviously tongue-in-cheek, but the Chiefs, or the Royals had the toughest 10-game stretch that they will have all season. Go look at the entire schedule. Nothing's going to stack up to that. But then to return home, you get a sweep, you win a series. You don't need to sweep series at home. You just need to win as many as you can, and to do it in the fashion that they did. The starting pitching continues to rock. They still need some bats to come around, and we'll get into that throughout the day. But good to see Salvi start to turn it around as well. Bobby continues to play well. Drew Waters had an excellent week. He's been a nice call-up. So, yeah, things trending in the positive direction for the boys in blue.
Yeah, and look, if they only beat the teams they're supposed to beat this year, they're going to be in the mix for a playoff spot. I think the chances are still very good to do more than just beat the teams they're supposed to. It gives them a little runway, though, and some time to maneuver. So it's been a big week for them. It's been a bit. We have a lot to get to today, and we'll get it all in. The Shockers added player. We'll discuss that as well. We've got an interview coming up at the top of the next hour, a cool charity event coming to town. So we have that for you today as well. I want to say thanks to Prairie Fire Coffee for keeping us fueled up each and every morning here on KFH. We enjoy those all across the Odyssey studios. Again, Max Power has your KFH hotline. It's 869-1240. You can give us your draft grades. You can do that on our video streams, Facebook, YouTube, X. It's all available for you. When we come back, we'll tell you what we thought of the draft. We'll start with the Chiefs. That's next on Sports Daily. It's Jacob Albrock. It's Brandon Zinner. Don't go away.
It's time to get back to the sports talk.
All right, let's do this thing. Go!
Sports Daily is on KFH.
Welcome back in, everybody. It is Sports Daily, and we are glad to be with you here this morning. It's Monday morning. Jacob Albrock, Brandon Zinner with you. And we got some draft to talk about here, Brandon. Let's start with the Chiefs. We've got a lot to get into. The Shedeur Sanders story is fascinating. It is not the quarterback sexy draft of a year ago, but Sanders provided a lot of drama. I think ultimately he ended up in a really, really good spot. But we'll get into all of that. The prank call. What a weird weekend. But let's start with the Chiefs, Brandon. You and me and Tommy and TJ were sort of discussing the Chiefs on a thread as round one came down the line. And I felt like the draft was falling for Simmons to be the guy. I thought going into the draft, I thought this was a good year for Kansas City to move up. And for me, it was specifically just be done with this left tackle situation for years. You move up, you take one of the top guys, you can bring them along slowly this year. And when I say slowly, I mean, they don't have to be ready for game one because of some of the other, moves they've made in the offseason. And Juwan Taylor's going to create a need there next year anyway. And they didn't move up. And then so we start watching, and it's like, okay, they're not going to move up. What are they going to do here? They could move up for edge. Some of those guys were kind of going, and man, Simmons just kept sliding right down the board. I know there's an injury risk, and I know he wasn't your favorite pick. I love that pick because I think if he is the most talented tackle in the draft, and by a lot of accounts he is, and I know there's the injury concern, they finally put themselves in a position with a player at that position for the first time since Eric Fisher that they can be done trying to patchwork a left tackle together. You got to be healthy here. But if that's the only concern, I think absolutely it's an appropriate risk for the Chiefs. I love that pick.
Yeah, I have come around to it a little bit. There's multiple ways to look at it. The whole throwing a bunch of resources at it and taking away resources from other parts of the team, it is valid. They paid Jalen Moore this offseason. They didn't have to give him a ton of money. They still are paying Juwan Taylor. The Josh Simmons injury, it's a real thing. The patellar tendon, he's a bigger dude. There is risk there. But in the long term, this has potential to be an absolute steal. By all accounts, he probably would have been a top 10 pick without the injury. He was playing like the best left tackle in college football, but the injury was there. In the end of the day, the Chiefs are able to trade back one spot, get an extra pick that helps them later in the draft as well. They move around, are able to do some things. I've come around to I'm accepting of the pick. There's things that I would have liked to do otherwise, I think, addressing the defensive line more in that first round, but if in the long term, if this guy's helping keep Patrick Mahomes upright and he's as good as he was with his college tape, because his college tape is it's filthy. It's absolutely ridiculous. If he can do that in a Chiefs uniform next year, it's not this year. I'll say it's a win for the Chiefs.
Yeah. And look, I think the other part of it is like if you've never done this, do it. Go look at like all the top end tackles in this league, whether they're all pros, whether they're graded, and just go look at where they were drafted. It's one of the positions where not a lot, like you all, it's one of the positions where high end draft capital is needed more than other positions. It's one of the most top heavy that way. There's quarterback, of course, man, tackle is one of those spots.
It might be the most
better. Yeah, you better take them early because the chances they pan out late are far less than some other positions. The Chiefs have done great of getting interior linemen late in drafts, but not tackles, and most teams don't. So you've got to, like, at some point you have to come to terms with that, the Chiefs. Now, the challenge has been, of course, that they never pick high enough in a draft to address it that way, at least in this era. So even if you go back further past Mahomes, right, since Eric Fisher, the Chiefs have been relevant for a decade and a half here almost. Like, they haven't had a lot of bad seasons outside of that one. It's made it really hard, and they've tried a number of ways to do it. They've traded a ton of draft capital. They've spent a ton of money. and it's never been the long-term solution. So you hope that this does that. And you mentioned the edge rusher, and I do think going into next season, because if it were me, I would take McDuffie. I don't think they can afford to franchise tag Karlaftis, because I don't think his production would match giving a top five defensive end contract at that point. But maybe you can get a long-term deal. I think that's going to be a challenge. Felix Anudike Uzomah isn't what they hoped he would be yet. And how many times can they keep bringing back Charles Omenihu? So they're going to have a need at edge rusher. So after Simmons, what do? They go spend high draft capital, Brandon, pick 63 and pick 66, and they get two of them. One of them, I believe, in Norman Locke can play defensive tackle. So, you know, there's a Chris Jones help answer. Like, the strategy of this draft started to make a ton of sense. And then with all the acquired capital, what do? Because they had to trade up to get to 85. Is that right? They had to trade up for that other third round pick. Then they go, and just in case with corner, the other position of need that we all sort of thought, because we don't know, you know, if they'll get a long-term deal done with McDuffie, they go and get a corner. So strategically, and I don't know a lot about either any of those three players they took there, Norman Lott, Jalat, or Williams. But I do know all three of them strategically next year when they have a ton of holes, because they ran it back this year, but they're not going to be able to do that again. That should help Spags and that defense continue to get better if they can't re-sign some of these guys next year.
Yeah, so just recapping, Norman Lott, it's that out of any pick, I think that's the most questionable one that the Chiefs made. If you go look, this is a guy that played sparingly in 5 years. He averaged 14 snaps for Tennessee this last year, which is like, this guy is going in the second round. So that is a very, very questionable one. He doesn't have a lot of production, but I think, yeah, again, they like to go with, we have these measurements, we want to this sort of athletic profile, and I think that they do see that with Omar Norman Lott, the defensive tackle out of Tennessee. They definitely see that with their other day two picks, and Ashton Gillette and Noel Williams. Ashton Gillette did produce at Louisville. Very good edge rusher. He has the measurables that Steve Spagnuolo was, and then Noel Williams, I mean, just the production jumps off the table. 14 career interceptions, 7 just this past year. Really good rangy cornerback, a lot of speed, long. I mean, I think he has a chance to come in, and he's going to be competing to be that number two. It's a bad day to be Josh Williams, because I think that this guy is going to be the long-term answer opposite of Trent McDuffie. But I am satisfied with what they did on day two.
Yeah, I thought, again, like, we're going to see about these players. That's when you're talking about the Chiefs having success, this is usually where they find it, right? Rounds, I don't know, 3 through 5, we'll call it. And they took a bunch of players there, and they had draft capital. And that's the thing, too. Like, they could have sat around and just picked a bunch of players at their spots, which would have been fine, by the way. But they clearly attacked guys that they liked, because they shrunk down the amount of picks and they used some of the capital to move around in the draft to do it. That always, to me, when I'm watching the draft, and this is just me, like, when I see teams move up like that, it tells me they really liked a player and they wanted to make sure they got a specific player. So every time you see a team move up, it's like, okay, well, they're about to take somebody they really like. And they did that several times. So that, you know, that makes you feel good. Jalen Royals, a receiver out of Utah State. I don't think the Chiefs had to have a receiver. I was never in that camp. I know a lot of people wanted the Chiefs to go receiver. I think they'll be fine at that position. This guy, in a best case scenario, will start the year as the number 4 receiver. And probably the number 5 receiver.
Well, with Rashee Rice pending suspension, he might be number 3.
Right, but if that court case isn't still, and I don't know what the latest is, but if it's still not even due in court until December, like, to start the year, he's probably, and that's fine. Like, that's okay.
And he's coming off the injury as well, so it's, yeah, so it's a luxury pick.
Either way, they still brought back Hollywood. Worthy has developed. Kelsey came back this year, and they brought back Juju. Like, they... I never, and I'm good. I like taking a receiver late in the draft. I don't care about that, a round 4 receiver, but the round 1 receiver thing. And I'm just like, guys, like, I don't know. Like, at some point, that's not the reason the Chiefs haven't been able to push the ball down the field. It's not because they don't have enough receive. Like, it's because they can't block it up. And now you hope they'll be able to block it up better and they can get some deep routes. And maybe this guy helps them or anybody helps them next year. But that was, to me, that was never going to be a this year proposition at wide receiver. They have enough there for now. Injuries are hard to predict. If they fall into that situation like they did a year ago, obviously they could use a receiver. So taking one in round four, I'm fine with. I don't know anything about the player. I've never seen him play football. Not one time, not one snap. Never watched Utah State last year. I won't lie to you.
You want me to break him down for you?
Yes.
Okay. So how does 10 catches of 50-plus yards in the last 2 years sound to you? Because that's the most in college football. How does 8 yards after contact for his career or after catch sound for you? So that says he's catching the ball for three yards past the line of scrimmage. He's taking it for 11 every single time. I mean, this guy... there was a lot of people who thought, including me, looking at a lot of mock drafts, that we say it for a lot of players. Oh, how did they not go in round two? Everyone always falls. No one rises, it seems, in the NFL draft. But this guy could have very well been gone very early on day two. A guy that a lot of people just projected to the Chiefs. And I think this was the Chiefs guy. If they were going receiver in day two and they get him early in day three, I love that pick. Maybe my favorite pick.
Just described Rashee Rice and Xavier.
That's his NFL comp, I think, Rashee Rice.
So, and that's good. That makes sense, right, for a Rashee Rice situation. I think, you know, after this season, you have three of those guys in the offense. It makes sense. I still think at some point Worthy will be a stretch the field guy. It didn't work last year.
We saw it in Super Bowl.
They've got to block that up better. No, I mean Worthy as a deep threat.
Yeah,
Worthy
we saw that in the Super Bowl. It was a great deep threat. And Mahomes has acknowledged that.
He's a great player. And he'll figure that out. I think that connection will happen. It's just, to me, it's more about can they give Mahomes and the receivers time to run deep routes. Like, we don't know if Rice or Worthy are good at that because they haven't had a chance to do it. The line has been pretty bad for a while. And so that's where I go back to Simmons. Like, to me, that opens up the offense. If they solve left tackle, whether it's Simmons or anybody this year, if they can solve the pass blocking, that's what the offense needs. So I love that. And I like a guy that fits stylistically. And it sounds like he's a good backup plan if and when Rice ultimately gets suspended and they finish it out with another linebacker. Fine. And then Breshard Smith, I agree with you. I think he stylistically fits in. I think it tells us, because there was this question, you know, there was a report, I think ESPN had the report that they were seriously considering running back and kind of moving up and doing all these things. I don't know that anybody watches the Chiefs and thinks they need like to change away from Isaiah Pacheco. I think that the world has caught up to what I've thought for years now, which is he's not going to hold up over a course of a season. He runs too violently, and he's not big enough to run that way 20 times a game. So I think this just puts another, bullet in the chamber for Andy Reid and the offense to be able to do that. I am not a believer in the health of Elijah Mitchell. I don't know how much he'll contribute because he's never been healthy. And I think Kareem Hunt is, running on fumes at this point. Great story last year. He helped the team a lot, but man, he adds zero juice to the run game. He's a great pass blocker and he can fall forward basically. And that's fine. That's okay. He knows what he's doing in the red zone. Like, he adds some stuff to the team, but I'd much rather see Pacheco with, 10, 12 carries, another guy with 8 carries, and Hunt with his role very clearly defined. So I think that's where you get some help here. And I think he and Pacheco can sort of be backup plans to each other. But yeah, again, it's a guy that fell that a lot of people were really high on. I've been hearing about Breshard Smith forever. When I saw him in the seventh, I was like, where did he come to? How did he get down to the seventh? Like, I thought everybody was high on him.
Yeah, Breshard Smith, he's also, so he was a wide receiver for a long time and then recently made the switch over to running back. So, and if you go watch his tape, I mean, he's going to be a guy where the Chiefs can line him up in the backfield, move him out wide, and then you're just going to get matchup problems, and that's going to be very beneficial, I think, for the Chiefs' offense. And then Jeff Bassa, the linebacker you talked about, he's going to be a really good run option right next to Nick Bolton. They should pair very well. And then Leo Chanel as well, Drew Tranquil as well. That linebacker group, I think, all of a sudden just got a lot deeper because I think he's going to be able to contribute on day one. But, yeah, I mean, go back to the Royals pick. Just we don't know in the end if after the season, Rashee Rice, the whole contract situation is going to come up. Is Brett Veach going to pull the trigger on paying that guy off of right now? We're looking at just a season and a half of production. Now we've got the injury, the off the field stuff. So I think it's always about just keep replenishing that room. Because in the end, you're looking behind the Rashee and Xavier Worthy. We don't know about Hollywood Brown. Juju, okay, he is what he is. Sky Moore is probably not going to be on this roster. Maybe I'd imagine. I wouldn't be surprised if he doesn't make it to training camp, honestly. Travis Kelce, who knows? We like Noah Gray. Jared Wiley drafted last year at tight end. The injury issues, they didn't get to see him as a rookie. But so, yeah, just keep replenishing those pass-catching options for Patrick Mahomes. But, yeah, overall, I'm happy with what Brett Veach was able to do over the last 3 days.
All right, we got just a few minutes here. We'll get into the Shedeur Sanders thing in the next segment. Real quick, what was your favorite pick of the draft?
Are we talking about the Chiefs or are we talking about...
No, just of anybody. We're going to give a favorite pick and a favorite like overall draft for a team. I'll go first on pick. I'll give you a second to think about it. And it's just because I love the player so much.
We might have the same one.
McMillan for the Panthers. I think he's going to make a huge impact there. I really, really like that player. And I think getting him there to help Bryce Young and, you know, they need some help at that position anyway, I think. I think that's just a massive get for them. And he went right where he was supposed to go. It wasn't like he fell into their lap or anything. I just really like that player, and I do think that's a good fit. That's my favorite pick.
Mm-hmm. I have a couple honorable mentions. Mac Olden to Green Bay, first wide receiver. They've taken the first round since 2002. That's a really cool story. Omarion Hampton, I think, is sneaky for the Chargers. I mean, he's going to come in and going to be their day one running back.
Such a good fit.
But my favorite one, it's so exciting, Emeka Ebuka to Tampa Bay. You're talking about he's going to get to play right behind Mike Evans and Chris Godwin, and with what the Bucs love to do with that offense, Emeka Ebuka is so good. Oh, that is going to be amazing watching him with – I mean, that offense is legit.
Couple of team for me. Chiefs, quite frankly, I loved the way the Chiefs got – I think getting Simmons late, the Chiefs are definitely in the conversation for me. I thought the Cowboys did a really good job. I know people didn't like taking a guard that early, but they got to replace Zach Martin. But getting Ezeraku in the second round and then Revelle in the third, come on now. Like, I thought they did a really good job. Look, I'm going to give the Jaguars, and I don't normally like moving up
for Travis
in a draft and giving up what they did, but they got two players. They got two players at two very clear needs. So I'll give the Jaguars a tip of the cap, and I'll give a tip of cap to the team they traded with, only because I feel like the Browns got a potential NFL starter in the fifth round. It doesn't matter what else happens in their draft. If Shedeur Sanders is a starter and a competent one, you got him in the fifth round, the rest of their draft's going to look great. Nobody will care. We kind of began to dig into some of our favorite things. Brandon gave you a draft he didn't like with the Falcons. The Falcons in the news here because one of their coach's kids prank called Shedeur Sanders, which is... I mean, I get it. Young people make bad decisions. It sucks in the moment. Like, if that would have happened, I think, Brandon, in, like, the first round and then Shedeur slid a little bit further into the first round, I don't think it would feel so sinister. It just, when you know that how far that went and how that went, that's what makes it, you're just like, yeah, that sucks. Like, that sucks. Like, because I love comedy. I love a good joke. Like, I don't want to sit here and get so mad about it. But if it would have been in a different circumstance and he wasn't like falling to the fifth round, I think but man, that's a tough one. And at some point that kid's just going to call Shedeur and be like, my bad, dude, that was not cool.
Yeah. I think the kid put out a statement yesterday. So the Falcons, I believe him and Shedeur did connect and Shedeur, accepted his apology. But yeah, if it would have happened, it's the fact that it was on camera and, I mean, just everything. I mean, they were live streaming their entire draft party and had a film crew there. Yeah, just the scenario in which when you put everything together, yeah, a little bit of a tough look. But, unfortunately, it comes with the territory.
If Shedeur has a good rookie year, though, that's going to make a great Netflix documentary.
There's going to be one anyway,
whatever it is that they're working on. So let's talk about him, because we went into the draft. I told you it'd be the most compelling storyline, no matter what happened, because he was the most polarizing player. I have liked Shedeur Sanders as a player since last year when he got to Colorado. I think the fact that they were able to achieve what they achieved offensively despite a really bad team being a bad, like, I thought it was pretty impressive. And I thought you don't get a chance in college to see quarterbacks take the kind of heat in a game that he took really for 2 years. Like, you don't get most of the time in college. The issue is they have too clean a pocket, right? They don't feel the kind of NFL pressure that they're going to feel. And that's a difficult transition. So while I understand that some people think he plays too out of design and, you know, he takes too many sacks, I'm like, you've got to consider the circumstances, though, at which he played. I look at it the other way. He was able to be really effective in circumstances most college quarterbacks don't even have to deal with. I thought, you know, the smaller parts of it, I think his accuracy is great. Like, I think he's tough and all of those things. So I think he has a chance to be a good quarterback. I liked him more than all the quarterbacks in the class. To fall to the fifth round, though, I mean, that's pretty wild. And to be so continuously passed, that's where you probably get a little fire with some of the smoke we heard about bad meetings, concern about not character, but character, not in the sense of like he's a bad kid, but that it doesn't translate. He's maybe too confident or whatever it is. There must have been something there, because that's the only thing. Like, there's no way teams watched his tape and were like, yeah, no, he doesn't have a chance to be very good. We'll pass. Like, it can't have just been that, because you can't do the kinds of things he did in college in those circumstances and be that way. I think he's got a chance to be a good quarterback. I think he's got a chance to be the best quarterback on the Browns by the end of this season, for sure.
Yeah, maybe in a couple months, maybe by training camp, he could.
Well, he's not going to get the chance right out of the gates. We know that.
Do we? With Kenny Pickett and Joe Flacco and Dylan Gabriel and Deshaun Watson with a torn Achilles, he very well might. I mean, that's a that's an open quarterback competition as far as I'm concerned.
I think it's a terrible room. That's why I say I think he had chance. I don't think he's got a chance to be a week one starter. That's too much egg on their face. Well, then why did you take Dylan Gabriel in the third? Right?
Like, great competition. There's no such thing as bad competition in the NFL. Right. I do have some questions about Shedeur. The Colorado offense is so much of screens at the line of scrimmage, let guys do stuff after the catch. He wasn't the greatest downfield passer, certainly not as good as Cam Ward was, but everything about his resume, he overcame so much as far as the deficiencies on his team. He was an All-American, Big 12 Offensive Player of the Year. This guy does have so much upside. There's no way he should have been a fifth-round quarterback. He probably shouldn't have made it after the second round at the absolute most. There were some mock drafts as we got closer to the draft, the week leading up, that had him falling out of the first round. We thought that was ridiculous. NFL teams know a little bit more than we do, and sure, guys fall for some reason. But yeah, the fact that he was still there in the fifth is kind of a joke, but it can make for a great story for him. So it's about what you do after you're drafted, not where you're drafted.
Yeah, it was, and you know, fortunately for him, it doesn't. He's got a background that doesn't affect him as much as it does a lot of guys, thankfully, because his dad's been successful and all of these things. You still don't like it. What I don't get is taking the other quarterback ahead of him. Like, if there are teams that just don't have the need yet, but to sit there and take some of the other guys ahead of him, that's where I'm like, really? Like, we've seen these guys play. Like, I don't know how you watch them both play. And
Tyler,
like, Colorado was not that good guy. Like, Colorado had a couple of like elite great players, and they got much better in year two. I don't want to take anything away from what they did. They got much better. But when you talk about what he was able to achieve there versus, you know, what Dylan Gabriel can achieve at Oregon or anything else, I'm like, man, we're just watching the same thing. Or maybe I'm way wrong. I've really liked Shedeur. I've told you the comp and the upside and sort of the ceiling for me is Baker Mayfield. It's not a knock on Baker Mayfield. I think Baker Mayfield's a really nice player. Do I think that's, you know, Joe Burrow or Josh Allen or Patrick Mahomes? No, I don't. But I think he's got a chance to be an NFL starter and a pretty good one. that flirts with the Pro Bowl from time to time. That's sort of, for me, that's what it was. I don't know enough about Cam Ward. And other than those two, I didn't really like any of the quarterbacks.
You didn't like Tyler Shuck, who was in the same high school recruiting class as Trevor Lawrence?
I did not.
That's ridiculous.
Jackson Dart's intriguing. I get Jackson Dart. That one I'll give you. I'll give you Dart. He's intriguing. But that's it. That's it. And so here you are. Is it because he's a social media sensation that's very concerned about image and branding and all of that, and he has been for a long time, and he's been an NIL darling? If that's the case, man, good for you. If confidence, borderline arrogance is an issue in the NFL, I don't know that we're all watching the same league. Like, these guys can't do anything without a designed, pre-designed touchdown celebration. That's TikTok on live TV. That's what the hell's the difference? I don't get it. Like, because he's aware of his brand and he's savvy. Look at who his dad is. He was the swaggiest player maybe in any sport of all time. Like, what are we doing here? What does that have anything to do with the football player? Can he fit in a locker room? Well, we'll find out. And if he can't, that stuff gets handled in the NFL. If you can play, you can stay. If you can't, you're going to get weeded out no matter what the circumstances are. So, like, if you don't have a locker room that can handle an overhyped or overconfident young quarterback, then you don't have a very good locker room, in my opinion. So, I get it. Rick says he went into interviews and was unprepared. We've heard of one with Brian Daboll. That's the problem with this is I don't want to excuse that behavior. That's a reason you should fall in a draft. I get it. But Brian Daboll has not been very good at his job as a head coach for the Giants, and he didn't do a very good job with Daniel Jones. And I know he cut his teeth on quarterback, and I get it. But I would have loved to see what Andy Reid thought of Shedeur Sanders. Obviously, they didn't need to go through that process. That's what I want to know. A guy who's willing to work with all kinds of different players, with all kinds of different personalities, who's had a lot of success in this league. What did Andy Reid think of Shedeur Sanders? What did John Harbaugh think of Shedeur Sanders? Like, what did those guys think of that process? But they didn't have to go through that process because they didn't need a quarterback. We'll see. Look, he may not ever even get the chance. He may fall flat on his face. Doesn't really matter now because he was a fifth-round pick. Just fascinating to see it. He now wears the crown of the quarterback that fell the furthest, right? That's the drama we love. We probably won't ever see one fall further than that we thought might have a first round grade.
Yeah, there was a point where we thought that Shedeur Sanders was going to be the number one overall pick in the draft shortly after the season, during the season. And then he ends up being not only going in the fifth round of the Browns, he was the last guy the Browns even drafted when we thought that he might have been the first guy that they drafted. So just a wild way for it all to play out. And it is hard going off of the hearsay reports that you have from all these guys, that he was going into interviews with teams that already had established quarterbacks and was basically checked out, unprepared, didn't really care to take the interviews. But again, he had the places that he wanted to go and got to live with it. So, yeah, we'll see how it all works out. I think it's as good of a situation as he could have gone to. As far as trying to play immediately, because with Geno Smith in Vegas, he wasn't going to get to play there right away.
Perfect fit for him.
Yeah, I'd rather go to the Browns and Kevin Stefanski at this point than with the Giants and Brian Daboll. That place is just a constant mess. But I agree.
I think end of the day, perfect fit. Like, that's the best spot he could have landed, honestly.
I'd rather go there than Tennessee, too, so.
Yeah. So, and then you got to think about, like, and this is the thing that I've thought's pretty funny. Like, people have more issue, and you can admit this or not, but you know it's true. A lot of people out there have far more issue with the fact that Shedeur Sanders, you know, wears big necklaces, makes videos, and does those kinds of things, and maybe, you know, appears unprepared or whatever. Then you do the Ravens having Mike Green fall into their lap, who has two sexual assault allegations. Again, they're just allegations. But when we want to talk about, like, what certain issues mean in the NFL and to the fans, like, come on now. Like, let's cut the kid some slack. He's a kid. He has had a really cool life and a very fortunate one, and he is confident. And you have to remember that apples don't fall too far from the trees, and he has the most confident dad perhaps that's ever played the sport. And I'm not taking anything away. I love Prime. But if that's the reason that you're going to let that kind of talent fall to the fifth round, and if you're a fan, you're like, see, I told you, he makes videos. He cares about social media.
At the end of the day, the people that are happy that he fall are the ones that are just too insecure with themselves. The guy has a brand. He reps it well.
I just care how he plays football.
Exactly. He's confident in himself. And, again, time will tell in the NFL. The NFL never lies.
Can he play? The NFL will sort that out on its own. When we come back, we'll talk Royals. Actually, when we come back, we're going to talk a cool charity event coming up, but we'll talk a lot of baseball in the next hour. Stick around, more Sports Daily coming up.
Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrock and Tommy Gester.
All right, welcome back in, everybody, to another hour of Sports Daily. Jacob Albrock, Brandon Zinner with you. We are joined by Steve Strain, Rick, am I going to say this right? Rikoski. It's my second choice. Rick, nice to meet you. We've got Steve and Rick in. We've got a cool event coming up we want to tell you about, let these guys tell you about. Maybe you can be involved or help out. It's called the Swing for a Cure event, and this helps with the Alzheimer's Association. It's a charity game. The proceeds go to an event there. We'll get into all of that. I've known Steve a long time. We spent a lot of time in the same part of the world. This was a cool event when you told me about it, Steve. So, now, this is, you know, it's all fun and it's charity and everything, but I need to know that you guys are ready to kick a little tail. So it's Steve, your team, up against Rick's team, Brookdale Senior Living, Chisholm Place Senior Living. This sounds like a pretty cool event, Steve. Tell us about it.
Well, we are both memory care communities, meaning we house people who have dementia living with us, and we are competing memory care communities. But Rick and I are friends, and this idea came up back last November that we do this and do it for charity. And so the Alzheimer's Association would be a natural fit. Also, it's in conjunction with the Longest Day, which is not until June, but that's a major fundraiser for the Alzheimer's Association, the Longest Day campaign. But it's probably going to be too hot in June. So we picked this weekend. It's going to be Friday night at the Independent School. Employees where I work versus employees where Rick works, both memory care communities, again, for the Alzheimer's Association. We've already raised over $3,000. When people show up, admission is just $5 per person or 10 for the whole family. There'll be concessions there, plenty of ways for us to raise more money, including Rusty Eck is bringing out a brand new Ford Bronco, and people can buy a raffle ticket for a chance to win that Bronco. With the proceeds of ticket sales going to the Alzheimer's Association as well.
Rick, this is something that you guys put a lot of passion into. What does if people want to come out, if they want to support, you guys work with these individuals all the time. What is the funding here that you're raising help actually accomplish?
Well, the funding is definitely going to benefit the Longest Day, the Alzheimer's Association. So that's our main goal and objective, is to really benefit these folks that we see every day. So we are really looking forward to it. Coupled with the fact that Steve and I are very competitive in sports. I grew up with sports, and he watched us beat a competitor. Well, Brookdale Tallgrass, we played them in volleyball, and I invited him to come out, and he watched that. So He witnessed that, and he thought he could take us on, so here we are. So it's going to be fun. We both love sports. We've got a lot of passion with the Alzheimer's Association and the Longest Day. I think it's going to be fun, and we'll see what happens.
This is going to be the Softball Swing for a Cure. How did this idea come up? What is the event going to look like? And talk about the competitive juices it's going to bring out of both of you guys.
Well, Rick mentioned that I came out and watched him do some team building with his coworkers playing volleyball. And it was his executive director, Jennifer Osborne, that said, Steve, we ought to play Chisholm Place in something sometime. And this was back in November. And I thought about it for a few minutes. And I said, what if we played softball next spring and let's do it for the Alzheimer's Association? And she said, you're on. So starting in January, we started having some planning meetings. We included Shanna Smith from the Alzheimer's Association in that and started getting some very basic, okay, how are we going to raise money? What's the game going to look like? And here we are, over $3,000 raised later, and the big night is almost here on Friday night. And yes, there's been a ton of trash talking going on. I think every time Rick and I get together, he brings a hefty bag because he knows how much trash we're going to be talking.
That's right.
You got to have it to make these events fun. Rick, are the staffs fully in on this? Are they embracing it the way they should be?
Yeah, exactly. They are. And we've been practicing, so has Steve's team. So we're having fun with it. There's some trash talk, but it's all in good fun. So we're having fun, and it's for a great cause. And we hope a lot of people come out and watch this because it's going to be fun. It's going to be entertaining. And, overconfidence with Steve results usually in humble outcomes. So we'll go from there and see what happens. So
the main Wendy the Wind Surge mascot will be there. This is Friday, May 2nd, 6:30, again at the Independent School. Steve, before we let you go, we know people can buy raffle tickets there. I assume there are still plenty of tickets and they'll just walk up and buy. Is that the best way to do it?
Absolutely. $5 for a person to get in, $10 for a family. Then we'll have raffle tickets for prizes between innings. And then to enter the Ford Bronco drawing, it's just $10 per raffle ticket.
And then everything is there on site.
How can people get involved if they're not able to make it out to the event?
Yeah,
they can call 558-5775, 558-5775. We just need a little bit of information to get you a link, and they can make a donation that way.
Which is always a good cause. It's all for the longest day in the Alzheimer's Association. Steve and Rick work hand in hand with these individuals all the time over at Brookdale and Chisholm Place. We appreciate what you guys do on a day-to-day basis. And we appreciate hearing the outcome of the game because winning is important and we want to know who wins the friendly competition.
Hey, we will have an after game party at Side Pockets, by the way. They're a big donor of this, and we'll have a post game party there. Rick doesn't know this. I've actually already arranged for grief counselors for his team because of how devastating this will be. Come console Rick and his teammates because this is going to linger with them for quite a while, I'm afraid.
That's right. Booing and hissing is welcome. It is encouraged by me. I don't know if you guys want it, but I'd love for a bunch of people to get out there and, you know, argue with umpires and boo. Make it fun. Steve, Rick, we appreciate it. Good luck this weekend. Friday at the Independent School. Get out there. It supports a great cause, and you can have some fun with these guys and all the players and maybe win a car while you're out there. Steve, Rick, thanks for being here with us on Sports Daily this morning.
Hey, thank you.
Thank you, guys.
All right. There they go. Check it out. Get out there. Love that. That's a fun event. That's a fun event. Charity softball. You ever a beer league softball player, Brandon?
Oh, yes, I was. I have a good one. So my first job out in Hayes, Kansas, I was able to play in a softball league. And it was my first time doing it. And I was wearing shorts, and I said, oh, yeah, like I'm going to slide into third base. It's not going to hurt at all. It's going to be great. And I wasn't able to wear pants for the next 3 weeks because my entire leg was scabbed. But I'm as competitive as it comes to adult softball.
I played a ton of beer league softball when I was younger. I can't imagine doing it now. Wouldn't be able to walk for a week. I remember we played a co-ed team with my now wife at one point. It was like a work team. It was fun. One of the probably I was playing like three nights a week. You know, I was one of those guys.
Oh yeah,
for a while because it was so much fun. And she's on first, and I think I'm either in the dugout yelling or maybe I was coaching first. And somebody hits the ball, and she's just like in my mind not hustling down to second. And I mean, I'm screaming at her like, "What are you doing?" And she gets to second, and I see like her eyes glistening, and I'm like, oh no. And I go, like, her quad exploded. It's just like, oh.
I've played a lot of adult soccer growing up as
can
well.
Can you still make it to third? Because the ball's not in. Can you go? You know, can you go? We got to score this run. Yeah, the injuries now of beer league softball frightened me a little bit. But I did. I was a big beer league softball guy back in the day. Hey, if you want to win some HTO, let's do that right now. And then we'll get to some Royals and some other things on the agenda here today. But if you want to win HTO, more than 26 flavors, you can do it right now. All you got to do is text the keyword T to 20357. That's TEA to 20357. Blueberry Summerade is back, by the way. So if you're looking for a nice, refreshing summer flavor, that one is back in there. These will be available for you in East Wichita, West Wichita, or in Derby. And again, all you got to do, text the keyword T to 20357, and that will get you a free iced tea from us here at Sports Daily. Real quick, Brandon, we got a couple more minutes. Finish up with the NFL draft, and then we'll talk Royals in the next segment. I mentioned what the Panthers did there. McMillan, my favorite pick. Did you have like a late round sleeper that you loved that you think will come in and have an immediate impact? There were a ton of KU players taken, a ton of K-State players taken. I don't think Giddens with the Colts or Devin Neal with the Saints are like day one impact, light it up guys, but could be long term. Anybody there late that you loved?
I think opposite of you. I think Devin Neal has an immediate impact ability.
Right in.
Yeah, I mean, he's going to be competing with TCU's Kendre Miller, who was just drafted last year. He only played six games because of injury, and he just really doesn't do a whole lot. I think Devin Neal has a chance to get a lot of goal line work in substitute of Alvin Kamara, and he just fits New Orleans, I think, so well. I think Devin Neal to New Orleans is one heck of a pick and a great landing spot for him.
We really wanted him to end up in Kansas City. I think most people did because he does seem versatile. But New Orleans is a good spot. How about R.J. Harvey mm-hmm. to Denver? You mentioned Amarian to the Chargers. R.J. Harvey could be an immediate impact guy for Denver too, man. Like that, I think the division in this draft got better. Jainty to the Raiders. You better be able to stop the run this year.
Oh yeah, I mean, but my favorite late one has to be Shadur to Cleveland. How can you not like?
I don't know how it could be anybody else. Exactly. Like as far as like pedigree to spot, because you know highest impact, of course. All right, when we come back, then we'll talk baseball. It's all Brock and Zenner on a Monday. Don't go away.
Okay, take it easy. We're going on the air.
This is Sports Daily on KFH.
All right, welcome back in, everybody. It is Sports Daily. We are glad to be here with you for another hour on the program. Jacob Albrock, Brandon Zenner. And it is Monday following the NFL draft. If you missed anything of that conversation, you can go back and listen on the Odyssey app. Let's talk Royals, Brandon. It was a really nice weekend. They got beat up by one of the best pitchers going right now in Hunter Brown yesterday. They took 2-3 against the Astros. You go through that just brutal stretch, including finishing up with a, you know, 6 out of 7 losses on the road. You know, what was it? And then like 9 out of 11 or whatever it was. It was just too many. But we talked about the stretch of baseball, which made this little homestand here pretty critical because especially with the Rockies and then into the Astros, who are starting to play a little bit better, you had to make up some ground in what you had lost with that bad road trip. Games in April matter just as much as the other games, but for me, it's more about Detroit and Cleveland look like they're for real. So as Kansas City sort of figures a few things out, you can't afford to get so far back at those teams while they are playing pretty well, and the Royals got right back where they needed to be. They're still, you know, they're still a little ways behind Detroit, but one game under 500 feels a whole lot better than what was it, eight games under 500 when they started that stretch. So breathe easy, Royals fans. There's a lot of good signs happening at the moment.
Yeah, and we do have to take like who everyone has played in into consideration. The Royals haven't even got to play the White Sox yet, and I hate to chalk up automatic wins for any team, but that's gonna be a lot of games that are gonna benefit the Royals down the stretch as they play all these games. The Royals, what continues to carry them is their starting pitching. Back to back shutouts on Friday and Saturday. They have the third most strikeouts by starters in all of baseball, one of the best starter ERAs in the league, the fourth at 3.34. Anytime any of these guys are taking the mound, Michael Lorenzen's probably looked like the shakiest out of the starters, but again, he's your fifth, and no one has an ace going in the five hole. So, I mean, they're very encouraging signs over the last week versus where we were just over a week ago, where it seemed like the sky was falling in Kansas City.
Yeah, look, and they are going to be fine in the rotation, assuming health. They're going to get healthier in the bullpen, which has looked better. Estevez has looked good. Ursic continues to deal. Daniel Lynch continues to deal. It really all has been about that offense. Remember, they had the 17 games in a row where they weren't scoring more than four runs. Well, that's gone now. The big thing there initially is what is Salvi going to do? What is Vinny Pasquantino going to do? Jonathan India has slowed way, 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 way down, which he's sort of coming back around. But the run production is going to be Vinny and Salvi. And so those guys both struggling out of the gates doesn't help. Salvi has certainly picked it up some. And I think Vinny, who's picked it up less, is hitting the ball hard. Mm. It's just he's been both unlucky and off to a slow start. And so I think he'll be okay. The big question early has been corner outfield. Well, Drew Waters has given them something. Mikel Garcia has been, it's been nice to see him getting time and run in the outfield so that his bat can be in there. But I think we're more encouraged right now about the offense than we have been. I think that's safe, right? That's fair.
I don't know. You talk about the streak is over. Well, now the streak is back to three consecutive games of four or fewer. It's still only four games the entire year, and they've played now 29. So,
yeah. I'm not saying they don't need to add more offense. I think you got to get Salvi and Vinny going. Is that going to solve everything? It's going to help for sure. It'll help. But I don't think there's any doubt that it is on April 28th already time to evaluate like what's out there for them. What could they go achieve? The most obvious is Jack Caglione. I mean, it is. And the biggest indicator that I think they are fast tracking him is seeing him play in the corner outfield. I could, Brandon, of all the things that have happened this season, in totality of what we've seen, the fact that they hadn't put him out there in the minor leagues yet, to me, was one of the strangest things of all of it. Bad because point. They don't have a unless they trade Vinny Pasquantino, they do not have a place for him right now at first base. And so not only are they desperate for power hitting, which is what he does, not only is he capable of a fast track because he's a high level college player that played a lot of college baseball that typically doesn't need as much time in the minor leagues, right? Think Wyatt Langford for the Rangers or what's his face that the A's just called up. Like these guys get called up quickly all the time. It never made sense to not put him in the clear spot. The Royals had an opening. Like they can, he could come up if he's ready and he can play right field, he could come up tomorrow and be an upgrade. I think jump at the bold move, but this isn't a guy who needs to spend time in AAA. You know what I mean? Like he needs to get to the big leagues as quick as he can because they need him desperately.
Yeah, you know a prospect's for real when MLB Pipeline, the Twitter account, is tweeting out video of him tracking down a routine fly ball in right field. They everyone knows that this guy is destined to be here probably sooner than later, especially just with the production that is coming from the outfield. Drew Waters has been a revelation. He has been great. He has a OPS of 801, which is that's going to be above average in the MLB. But outside of him, Kyle Isbell, you're going to get two good games in a row and then probably four or five clunkers. No, they only have, at this point, Drew Waters is the only outfielder that needs to be an everyday player. Jonathan India depends on, he needs to be an everyday player, but some infield, some outfield, it depends. But other than that, they don't have answers in the outfield right now. And Jack Caglione, how much longer are we talking? That's what I want to know. And I'm interested to hear from Jalen Thompson coming up later in the week.
Jalen stuck to his guns on it. He was like, they're not moving him because they don't like, they're going to take it slow. And I'm like, why are they going to take it slow? Like, they need him now. They've going to hit their threshold to get the extra year. Unless they're willing to make like a May trade, which you're not going to find a trading partner there. You got to move now because the Tigers are good and the Guardians are good and you're going to fall too far behind. The Royals have a deficiency in the lineup right now. There's no question. And if MJ Melendez, who did not carry over his good stretch of the second half last year, Hunter Renfroe, same thing. Like, if that's not happening for those guys, you're going to have a big problem. I love Michael Massey and Isbell and some of these other guys. Those are role players. Those are not middle of the lineup. Like, but Michael Massey in your six hole is just not going to be good enough. It's not. And I think they have a bottom of the lineup you could be happy about. And I think they have a top of the lineup you can be happy about. But they have got to get some production out of those other spots. And they have enough versatility where they can mix it and match it. They play everybody everywhere. Is there a player on the team outside of Bobby Witt Jr. that plays one position? Because I don't think there is. So that was always my question is like, maybe they want to take it slow. But what's holding you back from just letting Cags get some reps in the outfield? Because if he does ever come up, now you can mix and match that lineup even more. He's got to, before he comes up and commands a position, you better show us you can hit. Bobby Witt Jr. played third base his first year, right? Like, these guys move around all the time. It never made sense to me that they were like, nope, he's going to be a first baseman. I'm like, what? Why? Like, let him try to play the outfield. Let's see what happens. I bet you he'd be pretty good at it. And he has been. And so now it's more about when is his bat ready? And I have not really dug in. I don't know if you have yet on some of the little things that we need to see out of guys in the minor leagues and everything. We all know he hits the ball hard. He hits the ball hard as hell. Like, he crushes the ball.
Batting,
we get that.
280 OPS of 854. I mean, he has four home runs on the year, 22
it's walks and strikeouts that I look at more than anything else. And he's still striking out quite a bit more than he's walking.
He's got
24 strikeouts in 100 plate appearances and he's only walked 11 times. Mm-hmm. That's what we've got to watch. I think when you see fast tracking, like Wyatt Langford, another really, really good college player that got called up, his patience was impeccable, and that has helped him. But if you strike out a ton in Double A and you don't walk much and you come up to the big leagues, guess what's going to happen in the big leagues? You're going to strike out a ton and you're not going to walk much. So I think, you know, that's what we got to see. Like, you can't call him up and just let him strike out three times a game and hit a home run once a week. Like, that's not going to help this team. So if we're looking at some of the peripherals, I think you look at that as much as anything else with a guy trying to come up from Double A, which is what I'm sure everybody wants, him included, is can he walk enough? Can he develop the kind of plate discipline that it takes to be a good big league hitter? That's what I'm watching with him.
Yeah, and so he did play right field two games, twice in that series, so something to watch more. Will he get they'll start another series tomorrow. How many games does he get in right field versus first base? Because, again, we talked about the path is in the outfield. Vinny and Salvi are going to be playing first base every single day for this club. Can he limit the strikeouts? It is interesting just because he has 24 hits, 22 RBIs, which tells you almost every single time he's getting a hit, he is bringing in a run, and he's going to have runners on base in front of him more often than not if he does get to the big leagues. But can he limit those strikeouts? Because Yeah, I mean, 24% is not going to cut it in majors.
Well, they already strike out too much, right? Exactly. Like Salvi's striking out too much at the moment. Vinny's striking out too much at the moment. Bobby Witt's always going to strike out a little bit, but he makes up for it in other ways. They've already got guys that are doing that at the big league level. That would be a problem. That's not going to help you if he just gets up there and hacks away. So he's got to at least show that he can do it. And that's hard. Like, they got to rely on scouts and stuff for that. That's a little hard to look at the box score to see, like, how's his plate discipline? Is he swinging at strikes in the zone, or is he swinging at strikes out of the zone? Is he chasing? What's his chase rate? Like, a lot of that kind of stuff that, unless you're watching him every day, which the Royals are, of course, but we're not, right? We're not watching Northwest Arkansas every day. Like, if he's not chasing and he's just swinging at good pitches, you probably live with that. It's more about, is he chasing bad pitches on these strikeouts? Because if he is, the big league pitcher will never give him a pitch to hit. Like, they'll just never throw him a strike if he's chasing out of the zone. So we'll see on that, right? We'll see. But he's the next option. Like, is his, I think when you talk about helping this offense, he is up first. Sort of. I think they want to make a trade, and they are willing, and they will. I just don't know that it's like they're not going to find a trade partner at the moment. So if Cags is first up, and I think he is, how quickly can that come? Otherwise, this is sort of the lineup and the combination of players they're going to run out there until June at best. So another month of this, right, where they've got to have some guys figured out. I will also say that I think Salvi and or Vinny will pick it up here pretty quick. Salvi, we're starting to see the signs of it. Vinny, again, I think he might be hitting the ball. If one or both of those guys starts hitting, we'll probably be okay with this offense for a little while. Long term, they could use help, but in the short term, I think they'd have enough for a month to get there.
Yeah, interesting enough, the Royals actually only strike out the 23rd most in baseball, so they're actually one of the best teams in not striking out. But, I mean, by every other offensive metric, they're not good. They are 25th in batting average. And then when you look at their team, OPS, they are 29th. The only team worse than them in OPS, which is on-base plus slugging, is the White Sox. So, and they're only separated by 400. So, yeah, not great.
They need power. And the guy sitting there with all the power in the world is finally playing a position that can come help you. So that was, you know, of all the wins and losses last week, big picture, that may be the most meaningful thing we saw last week was that Cags got a little time in the outfield. So let's look here at the week. They get the day off today, and then they're back at it tomorrow. They go on a little six-game road trip here, Tampa and Baltimore. Again, Baltimore is one of those teams you might like seeing them on the schedule now rather than later. They're not going to struggle all season. They are struggling. You hope that you catch the good end of it. Tampa is all of a sudden playing in a hitter's park, which has been a really strange development. Like, Tampa, you know, they're off, but it's, you know, they had to switch stadiums or whatever. And I guess this is now a hitter's park that they play in. But that's their next six. That is their week. I talked about 11-5 over the 16 game stretch, Brandon, as sort of where they needed to be. We're not quite to the Minnesota portion of that yet, or the White Sox portion, I should say, of that yet, of that, to finish that up. But going, you know, 5-1 is a great way to start it. If the White Sox sit there and you hope at home you take at least three of those four, that gets you to 8. That means 500 here on this road trip gets you to where I thought they'd need to be at the end of the 16 games. And I think I'll stick to that. I mean, 500 on the road here, I'd be okay with.
Yeah, I think you'll take 3-3. You win one of these series, you take one and another. I think that's going to be okay. The great thing is that they have really good, I think, pitching matchups in all of these. They, especially when it comes to the series with Baltimore, they're going to go against Tomoyuki Sugano, but they're going to go opposite of that with Cole Reagans, and they're going to get Charlie Morton hasn't been great. Dean Kramer hasn't been any good for Baltimore as well. So they're going to have probably the pitching matchup, the advantage, and I imagine at least four of these games, if not five and maybe all six. So,
yeah, look, in Tampa has good pitchers. Again, they're kind of playing in a funny park this year. as they have to rebuild theirs. So Reagan's has, I'm glad you brought him up. He's got a mild left groin strain. They have not put him on the IL. A groin strain typically is going to put you on the IL. So I don't know what's going on with that. I guess they can do it retroactive and they don't need to yet, so it doesn't really matter. But he hasn't gone on yet, which I guess is a good sign. But he's supposed to pitch on Tuesday, on Wednesday.
The Royals don't have a starter listed yet for Wednesday per ESPN. So that would be something.
I feel like you got to put him on. So then even if they don't, whatever. If they put him on, who is that spot? So because Alec Marsh isn't quite ready yet. Do you just call who's their best AAA pitcher? They have a day off today. So maybe they can just reshuffle it and just skip it, basically skip his spot and keep everybody on regular rest. I guess that would be the easiest and simplest solution. And then if you do that, maybe you don't have to put him on the IL and just see how he responds. I don't remember how far after the fact they can go retroactive on an IL stint. Like if they just skip his start and then, four or five more days from now, can they go 15-day IL retroactive to 10 days ago? I don't know, but it is interesting that he hasn't gone on yet.
Yeah, I think if they would decide to put him on the IL either today or tomorrow, I think they can go back to his last start and make it retroactively. But, I mean, yeah, I haven't seen anyone say that IL is the plan, so that's going to be something to watch for. Yeah, as far as what they do in his place, I mean, I don't want to see a bullpen game that Angel Zerpa is starting personally,
You know, they should be able to skip, though, I would think. Like, even because they get possible. Today off. Brandon, let's talk a little Shocker basketball. Jarrett Valencia from Monmouth, who has ties to PJ Cousinard, is added over the weekend. You know, the production at Monmouth, I don't think, is anything that is going to light it up, but it's a clear need for this team that he fills. You know, positionally, size-wise, they have a need here. He's got ties to your new assistant coach, so it makes a lot of sense to me.
Yeah, Jared Valencia is 6'9", but he's not a 6'9" big. He's a 6'9" wing forward. He's probably going to, like, a little bit of a Corey Washington role is what he's going to fill. Yep. He's going to play great defense. He shoots the ball almost 50% from the field, almost 40% from three, but then he only averages 8 points and four rebounds in that territory. Now, he did have to cede a lot of production to Abdi Bashir, a guy that we've talked about a good amount now at K-State, because, I mean, that was one of the best scorers in the country. But I think he's going to come in and he's going to fill a clear need as far as a great athlete. He's going to play another great defensive guy. He was all-league defensive player with Monmouth and a guy who was highly touted out of high school. He was recruited. He had K-State and UConn as his final teams that he was picking between. And then I think there was eligibility issues. He goes to Monmouth. That's a sit out because of the eligibility issues. But it's a good get for Wichita State. This is the kind of player that Paul Mills wants to be bringing in, a type of player that I think is going to be loved by the Shocker faithful.
Why? Because of the defense.
I mean,
like, and you see a trend here now, which I think is a really smart thing for Paul Mills and this staff. Caron Boyd, great defensive player. SoCon Defensive Player of the Year, right? You got another all-league defender in Jarrett Valencia. Defense translates. So now it's, can they get enough offense to support it? Because they'll be a little, they've got two small guards right now that we project into the starting lineup. And then, of course, they bring in the Purdue big, who we don't really know what to expect. He didn't play a lot. You can see what they're trying to do. The Shockers are trying to lead by defense next year, and I think that's the right way to go. I happen to think that if you can get that done early and you can be really good at that, it's somewhat of a counter to the issues that can come up in the transfer portal. Like if you can come in and you know out of the gates that you're going to be a really good defensive team, because look at what happened with Wichita State last year, right? They had some success in the non-con, But that when they went through their stretch where we were all scratching our heads, it's because they couldn't play any defense. And then all of a sudden they start to play defense and then they become a pretty good team again. So now, like, we see this design and it looks, at least to me, or maybe to us, I don't want to speak for you, that they are absolutely looking like they want to build through defense. Maybe some of these younger guys can step up and be, you know, spot offensive players. But from what we can see, and I don't know if Kendall, who you know more about than I do because you saw him more in person at Barton, and Kenyon Giles can provide that kind of offense. But if you can start that baseline with we're going to be good defensively, I like that for Wichita State. I do.
Yeah, so, I mean, Giles, he's going to come in. He's going to be a sharpshooter. He should be probably the three-point guy that this team is going to lead on. And then Karam Boyd is going to give you more offense in the transition. Jared Valencia, I mean, you watch his game. He looks fluid on offense, so a lot of mid-range that he can make. But I think he has a lot of three-point potential. I think Kendall is going to do a lot of the ball handling and then the transition game as well. They're going to need to find another consistent shooter. That's what Wichita State lacked a lot last year. Along with the defense, it was settling for a lot of threes. They never got the production that they wanted from an A.J. McGinnis. And I this team does not need to be shooting 16 threes.
I don't know if you're going to find it. Yeah. Every team in the country is looking. Shooting is expensive. I don't know if they're going to find it. So if we can come to terms with that fact, with at the current moment of the program, that they're not going to go out P.J. Haggerty, right? It's not happening. They can't, you know, so if it's not, what do? Well, you'd be really good on defense. That's what you do. You play ugly. You play angry, for the proper term, here in the city of Wichita. And I think more than other off seasons, even, like, it seems like there is a clear effort to do that. Where does the offense come from? I don't know. They still have three roster spots, I believe.
That's,
I think
it's what we're looking like.
So you've still got an opportunity, but again, like, it's not going to be that they go out and they get one of the top portal guys who's been highly successful offensively. They're going to have to swing at some other types of players, junior college players, whatever it is, and see if they can't find, and they have talented young players, right? Like, they've got pretty highly recruited young guys, and maybe with the right opportunity, one of them can step up into that offensive role and be bold enough to create offense the way Xavier Bell created offense, by being, you know, explosive to the basket and get to the free throw line. We'll see. But if you told me coming into this season you had to start me with a baseline of a bunch of dudes that came in from mid-majors that averaged 11 points a game or whatever, or guys that are proven to be the best defenders in their league, I'll take the latter. I think that's a better start for Wichita State. I do. And I think if, you know, for Paul Mills, who's kind of cut his teeth offensively, if he can get some of these guys to really buy in and do some of the things schematically, then you got a shot. I don't know where this fits in next year. I mean, I have no idea what the other teams in the league have done. I know Memphis has lost a bunch of really good players. That's all I know. I don't know what anybody else is doing. I think that's most people. So we don't even know where to start with. Like, could you imagine, Brandon, somebody saying, hey, I need you to predict the AAC this year?
And not till I see the final rosters at Media Day. I mean, we saw it with Memphis, lost Tyreek Smith three games in the season. So, I mean, we don't know what these rosters are going to look like. I need to see it all on paper. Of note, when we were talking about Wichita State's young guys, they did lose Zion Pipkin last week, which I'm sure you guys did talk. And he was a former top 150 recruit with Cousinard.
That was a weird one. That was a weird one, by the way.
It is
he
weird.
Eyes, I think, to Cousinard. I think Pipkin's, like, connection to the program, right, was Cousinard. It's probably an opportunity thing. I hope, I don't know. I don't know what to expect. I really don't. But I am very happy with the design of what they're doing. I don't know the financials of it enough to tell you whether I think they should be getting more high-profile players. I mean, anybody that does is guessing, because we don't know how those conversations are going. But as far as strategy to bring in a bunch of dogs, I think that's exactly what Wichita State always needs to be doing.
What it is going to come down to is what we thought we were getting last year is the buy-in and the constant effort. Because there was times that we saw for the Shocker team this past season, where the effort was just not there.
Not at the end of the year, but yes. When they had the gates, for sure.
When they had the struggles in January and early February, it was lack of effort, lack of execution, and it was just pure laziness. And it seems like that's what they're going to try to go after and say, guys that are proven defenders, guys that are proven team guys, and does it translate? That's what we're going to have to wait to see in the end. But as far as what they're able to do, I think it's been a good portal cycle for Paul Mills. I really do.
Yeah, I do too. I do too. Because we don't know, again, we don't know the finances of it, but I would agree. I'll give it a nod of approval so far. And it's so far. They still have three spots. You never know. You never know what's out there. And Taylor Eldridge always puts it better, and he knows this stuff better than I do, certainly. They're winning some recruiting battles, basically. Like, they're winning battles for players. I think that's a good sign.
Valencia was also looking at Syracuse, so
yeah,
that tells you all you need to know.
When you're beating other teams directly for guys that you want, I think that's what you like to see. All right, let's talk. I'm going to give you a few minutes here with the NBA playoffs, Brandon. Like, I haven't watched a lick of them yet. What do we need to know? I know your Timberwolves look like they're in control of a series.
Anything?
I know Damian Lillard's out, so that probably does the Bucks in. What is the big takeaway so far?
That was tough to watch for the Bucks. They ended up losing by 26 yesterday. Dame Lillard comes back. If you haven't followed the story, he was suffering from blood clots and had been on blood thinning medication, so he hadn't played in quite some time. And if I remember right, either game four, which they just had and the Bucks lose, or game three was his first game back. So he comes back and it's looking, I haven't followed up. I think it's going to be a ruptured Achilles. That's really tough. The Bucks are probably now done to the Pacers. Cleveland's been in control against the Heat. They're about to sweep that series. The first game yesterday, Knicks Pistons. Absolute theater. The Pistons get a shot at the buzzer. Tim Hardaway was fouled, wasn't called, and then the NBA comes out and admits, which the NBA admits, yeah, we missed a shot with 0.1 seconds left. That Tim Hardaway goes to the free throw line. They're only down one, so he's getting three free throws. But the Knicks lead that one 3-1, but they are far from in control against the Pistons. I mean, the Pistons could absolutely come back and force that to a game seven. The Warriors have a chance to go up 3-1 tonight against the Rockets.
Yeah, our boy Fred VanVleet's got to pick it up. I was going to ask you, that's the big upset right now, but the Warriors have been hot, it's the Warriors.
They were bad without Jimmy Butler, and since Jimmy Butler, they've been maybe the best team in the entire NBA. So not surprising to see. The Wolves were a blown 26-point lead with 10 minutes left against the Bucks in the final Tuesday of the season from being the 4 seed, ended up being the 6 seed, and now they're up 3-1 going back to L.A., which is going to be great late-night television Wednesday. But the Clippers-Nuggets series has been absolute theater. Watching Kawhi Leonard remind everybody of how freaking good he is. If he was healthy, he would have been a top five player of this generation. He hasn't been.
I mean, but he has been in the years that he's played.
Oh, yeah.
There's not a better, and there hasn't been a better two-way player in the NBA. When Kawhi Leonard is that dude. Like, he is, when you've got a case to make as the best defensive player, and we'll call it one of the best. He's never been the best offensive player, but like as two-way players go, yeah, I think people forget what Kawhi Leonard has been over his career. I think that's a great story.
But on any given night, he can be the best defensive player on the floor, and he can put 30 on your head and just absolute. I mean, he has Jokic and company looking like, I mean, they're just so frustrated. But that series is still tied 2-2. So, I mean,
yeah, that's it. That's a good one. I will lock in. I'll make the commitment to lock in at least by conference championships. I really want to see if the Thunder and the Cavs are as good as their records and all of those things. I think the Warriors story is great, although, you know, I'd like to see Fred VanVleet and the Rockets get through. There's a lot there. And your Timberwolves. I'm always rooting for Minnesota sports fans. You guys deserve one. I don't know if they're good enough to win a title, but maybe.
If the Wolves are playing at the Thunder in a conference championship series, best believe I'm getting down to Oklahoma City for at least one of those games.
Yeah, it's going to be. Why don't we gotta all jump on board with Oklahoma City? They are seriously right down the road from us.
Yeah, only 2 hours away. The games are electric, but you're not getting me off the Wolves bandwagon. I'm sorry.
All right, that'll do it for us here on this Monday of Sports Daily. Brandon, thanks for hopping in for Tommy.
Yeah, a lot of fun stuff to talk about. We'll see what the Royals are able to do the rest of the week, and college portal never stops.
Tommy will be back tomorrow. Tonight on KFH, you've got the Brian Green Show at 6 o'clock, Wichita State Baseball, the Christy Breadbinner Show, 7 o'clock, talking Shocker softball. We appreciate everybody for tuning in. Thanks to Max for keeping us on the air here, and we will talk tomorrow.